work was done in the roundhouses. You see, there's quite a small army of men, some of them pretty skilled in their work. You have your pipe fitters and your machinists and your wheelmen and your boiler washers and your fire builders and hostler helpers and your clerks that fulfill the orders that came from the dispatcher's office or the engine dispatcher. And there's really quite a small army of men and women that used to be required around the roundhouse. A wide variety of work, electricians. Some people specialized only in what were known as tank men. That is, they specialized in examining the metal linings of the water tanks and the engine tenders, and others checked up on the 34-inch coupler height and various things like incidental to the safe operation of a locomotive were all had to do with the force in the roundhouse. And we were lucky at this end because the water hereabouts is very pure. But in some parts of the railroad, particularly in parts of the Midwest and Southeastern, they have trouble with what they call locomotive foaming, where the water is impure, and it could cause trouble if the boiler became too full of a fungus or a gathering in the pipes of fluid. But we never had that trouble here, because our Puget Sound water is reasonably pure. Do you think of any other work there, Al?
Well, the jobs that were more involved with fellows who eventually planned to go out firing were the ones in handling the locomotives or getting them ready for departure, and that would include the man that greased the locomotive. All the side rods have grease connections, and they had to be greased with a big air gun. And the hostler, who was actually a fireman with several years' experience, who moved the engines around as they came in and got them in their stall after they'd been handled, and then got them out when it was time for them to leave. And he had a helper, naturally called a hostler helper, who did the work on the ground of lining the switches and actually putting the fuel into the tank, whether it was oil or coal, and put water in the tank, and would turn the turntable, guide, watch while the engine was being put on, make sure that there was no derailment, and watch while they were putting it in the house. You had to spot the locomotive or sight it so that the stack was right underneath a chimney that would vent the smoke outside of the roundhouse. And then there was the supply man who saw that the engine was equipped with all the necessary supplies, flares and torpedoes and oil and grease and flags and lanterns and a water bucket and whatever else was needed on it. And usually the fellas who eventually went firing, they had these jobs, working actually with the locomotives. And the first job you ever got normally was starting out with just being an engine wiper. And all that fella had to do was just take oily waste and wipe the engine off, clean it, which is something they don't do anymore. They wash them in an automatic wash rack. But at that time, the first day I went to work, they handed me some waste and told me to start polishing it. You just climb up on it, start at the top, and work your way down. The jackets were painted so that they could be wiped, they'd be reasonably shiny. And you'd also have to clean windows and do odd jobs of getting the engine in proper condition. Because when the fireman came on duty, got ready to go, if you didn't have all his supplies on, someone got a little bit unhappy that you'd neglected to fix the engine up properly. Some of the engineers be unhappy too if they didn't have all their equipment ready and oil cans full ready for them to start oiling around, getting your engine ready to start off on the run. And Hostler Helper was probably the best job of any of them, because you were more active and the time seemed to go better, you were moving around more. And once you got your work cleaned up, then you could go sit down and rest for a little while. The worst job of all, as far as I was ever concerned, was the job of fire builder. And that was keeping steam on the engines that were idle. Normally, they didn't let a fire go out on an engine. You kept steam on it all the time, unless there was some reason to allow the engine boiler to become cold so that it could be worked on. So you had to keep going from one engine to another and adding a little coal and putting some more water in and maybe turn on the blower to get the steam pressure up a little higher so that it didn't get down too far. And particularly on the weekends, it was rough because there might be 30 locomotives in there and you just ran from one to the other with just a continual job of one engine after another and no rest. I just hated to see the weekends come around and I'd get stuck with that job. And then on top of that, occasionally there'd be a cold engine that had been worked on and it was necessary to fire it up from ice cold, ready to go in the morning then. And that meant getting cordwood and throwing into the firebox and waste with kerosene on it and get a fire started that way. And then after that got burning enough, we began to add coal to it. And it would take hours before the boiler water would even begin to get warm. And they had a blower connection supplied by the roundhouse that you could get a draft on the fire that way. To speed up the operation, but between taking care of an engine like that and the 20 or 30 others that were sitting around, it just seemed like there wasn't enough minutes in an hour to keep everything going. It was
especially
really
on the weekend.
Weekend was terrible.
When the branches,
because all the engines would be in over Sunday, it would just be jammed with engine. Every available track would have a locomotive on it. And you just climb down from one and take two steps and up into the cab of the next one, work on it, and go down and up to the next one.
Maybe you got a leaker in there, somebody that's just about dead, you know.
Yeah.
Two or three, and you have to nurse that about every 15 minutes. Just get it very easy with coal and a little blower, and then run back to it 5 minutes later and rake it a little.
It just seemed like you were running all night long. Oh, 8 hours. You work 6 hours, or 6 days a week at that point. And then you'd have oil burners. Couldn't leave a spot fire in those very well, so you would have to fire it up with a full fire and get it up to full steam pressure and then close everything down and close all the dampers so that it would stay hot as long as possible until you got it. Hopefully it wouldn't be down too low by the time you'd made the circuit and got back again.
You see, like Al said, you couldn't leave a spot fire in those because as the steam goes down, so would your spot fire diminish until you wouldn't have enough atomizer to keep her going at all, you know.
The oil comes in through a pipe, and then right below it is a steam jet that causes the oil to spray out into the firebox and burn. Well, if you don't have enough of this atomizer to steam to spray it out, the oil tends to dribble down, and the first thing you know, it'll dribble on the ground beneath the engine. Then a spark of partially burning oil will drop on it, and you can set fire to the whole locomotive.
That's what happened to me with the 1548 that time. I didn't know enough atomizer on that one.
Yeah, it happened to several times there.
Can you look at this a minute? Mm-hmm. Now, there's the way the roundhouse used to be. See, there was 24 stalls there, and there was about, probably 24 or more out here. See. Now, it's all gone. That's the way it is now.
It's just a shame.
Roundhouse was an interesting place.
Yeah.
You walk through it and all these great huge locomotives sitting there kind of hissing and pumps working on them occasionally, you know, pumping away and exhausting. It was kind of spooky at night, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
You walk amongst those great big huge locomotives sitting there.
One little light going in each section.
Yeah. Real dark.
Yeah.
Sometimes something that you weren't paying attention. There'd be a pipe going across to connect the blower up or something. You walk and hit your head on that. Of course, all the lights come on in.
But it wasn't spooky when you walked into a section where they were blowing down something.
Oh, yeah. They,
you couldn't hear yourself think.
They have blow-off cocks that they can open up and allow the steam to escape from the boiler. And, of course, it takes a long time to let it all blow out, and it can make a tremendous amount of noise while it's doing it. And they'd have to do that sometimes to get the steam and the hot water out of them so they could work on them. They had to work on the boiler flues or stuff like that.
That was a spaceship building at the 40th Street, wasn't it? When they hit the Kent Rail?
Oh, I don't remember now. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know who was the engineer on that.
I think it was Bill Page.
That run. They spilled a lot of cars there that time. And there it is again. What year was it they turned the train over out here? 66, was it?
23.
1923?
I think.
Some kids lined a switch on the main line, and this train came around the bend, and the time they saw it, it was too late to stop, and of course they went onto the siding instead of going straight ahead, and when they turned onto the siding where they were going too fast a speed, and it turned the engine over on the side.
September 11th,
1934. Oh, it was 34, yeah. That late. Yeah,
see how the book comes in, honey?
Oh, my.
September, I was in Chicago, I was the first passenger engine I ever fired at 240.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. September 11th, 1934. Now, you see how handy that book is there?
Yeah.
Now, was that a freight train?
No, that was 423.
That's what I thought. I thought it was packed.
423.
Huh. Steal your little book. Well, that's a...
Well, there's a lot of information in there. I'm glad you met Major. He was always a great devotee of that book.
Yeah,
he retired there about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
He was running the Bureau of Identification and Records too. Anyway. But quite a boy. I feel like a stranger now. I go down there and darn few of them know me.
Yeah, big turnover in men. You know, it's getting that way around here in Tacoma in the yard now. Mm-hmm. If I get around late, I work day shift now, and if I happen to work overtime and see some of the afternoon crews, and especially if I ever see any of the night crews in the morning, you know, when I'm going to work, I don't know very many of them, because a lot of them, since emergency.
It's a funny feeling, don't it? Yeah,
to see the familiar faces disappearing, yeah. You know, and these new ones coming in, and
by the way, what did become a Sovereign?
He's still working.
Is he on this crew?
No.
That's a funny thing. Here, 4 or 5 months ago, Al invited me to ride down on his outfit from South Tacoma here one afternoon. And he introduced me to the various switchmen when they came up in the cab, you know. And he started to introduce me to a guy named Sovereign. And both of us hit just like that, because it had been 30 years ago, I was working in the roundhouse, and Sovereign was working in the roundhouse. And I had my hands full. I had 2 or 3 engines there, like I was talking about. And I couldn't make this one oil burner catch her fire. I put the waste in, and she'd squirt the wrong way, you know, and it had missed my waste, and I didn't have time to fool around with the thing. And Sovereign was watching the next section of the house. Each of us had about 12 engines, you know, there. And I asked him if he's busy. I said, I can't get this darn thing to catch. And Sovereign came, and he worked at it till he got her caught. And that was about the last day that I was there, you know. And here I hadn't seen the guy since to get on Al's engine, and here he's a switchman now working for Al. It's 30 years, and yet both of us recognize each other.
Yeah, as soon as they saw each other, well, they didn't know who
the fellow was, all right. Kind of a curious thing. It's sort of a small world after all.
Well,
That was 1945.
I know I happened to mention at work one day to another fellow that I'd been talking to, Herman. I says, he used to work down here. And he says, you mean Herman Hunt? I says, yeah. Well, I remember him. So that was Terry Starwick.
Yeah, man.
Well,
it bugs me. Now, you know, in the old days, the cars would stop here. A police car would stop in front of the house, and they'd shoot the breeze with me. I might be out mowing the grass or something. They'd leave the radio on and shoot the breeze with me, you know, and they'd use a telephone or something, you know, here, and I felt like I was still among them, you know. Now, those that do stop don't know me from Adam's hind leg, you know. They just... complete stranger to me, and I'm a stranger to them. But it kind of makes a guy feel funny. Now, yesterday I was down in the County City building, paid the last half of my house taxes. I only saw three guys that I knew, knew me, you know, and I thought, well, that's fine stuff. There used to be hundreds of them. I lived there all day, you know, practically. But kind of bugs a guy when they don't know you anymore.
Yeah, because you know, time is passing on, and they keep changing around a lot.
How soon we are forgotten.
Yeah.
But there's a few of them still remember the book, anyway. That's like your major there. Okay, I don't know, I've always just kind of had the habit of writing things down. I had to when I went to Olympia. You see, the Tribune sent me to Olympia. In 1925, I was down there 4 years in the Olympia office, you see. They were covering the State House and one thing and another, Olympia, and they were so darn many things that you had to remember. And then future dates, you know. My mother gave me a book, wasn't this one, one just like it, for my birthday, and I didn't have any use for the doggone thing, so I put the suit in the dresser drawer, and it was there. For a long time, and I got thinking, how am I going to use those big calendars, you know, as much as I could to write the future stuff in. That didn't, it soon got pulled. Now, one day I thought of this darn book. So I started using one side of it for A, B, C, and Dover, but if this was past and future, things that I had to look out for, I put here under that letter, you see. And that is how this system evolved. Although I don't bother with the future anymore, but that's how it's just straight past now. But it's chronological, it's right in order, and it's alphabetically in order, so I can turn to anything I want. Now he's talking about 423 there a while ago. Well, anything pertaining to NP Rex is always under M, see? And I just turned right to N, and there it was. But it's handy.
You were talking, when I came to visit you last time, you were talking about working, going back to work during the war and the switch yards, and just mentioning a little bit about what you did. But besides working in the roundhouse there, I know you said that you fired engines every once in a while, we run out with it. What did you work actually in the switch yards with the switching the cars around? Or?
You mean in the roundhouse?
No, yeah, during World War II.
World War II? Oh, yeah. I got a lot of road trips in World War II.
Did you go to the harbor too, I suppose?
The what?
You go down to Grace Harbor on any of those runs?
No, I never went down that way. I went to Portland twice. I went with Gus Einhaus once, and Roscoe
Dorn.
And I never went down to Harborland, though.
Yeah, I didn't know if maybe they'd called you for the high wall.
No. That was 693 and 694, but I never got any of that.
Uh-huh.
No. But I got east. I went to Seattle a couple of times and to Auburn a half a dozen times. And on the Buckley Turn, I made two trips with Portrude on that, on the 1274, Glenn Portrude.
Oh, was he on that run?
Yeah.
I'd forgotten
he's dead now, but he was 1274, and boy, was I uneasy. It had the two round doors and the chins. It didn't have air doors.
Oh, that, now this was way back.
Yeah, that tandem compound. Yeah.
I see.
And
I remember these guys, the older engineers, would refer to the 1200s as battleships.
Yeah, a battleship.
Why did they call them battleships?
I don't know, unless it had the two round doors and the chains, and you always get them fouled up with the Johnson bar. Uh-huh. You know, that was the only engine here that they'd never converted. Now, you take the 1270, and the 1256, and 1264, and those, they'd all been simple, see?
Right.
But this engine, you see, what it means, a tandem compound. There's a high-pressure cylinder ahead of a low-pressure cylinder, and the piston is on the same shaft and goes through both of them. See, there's a sleeve valve extension on the high-pressure to steady it, you know, theoretically, anyway. And that was the only one. Well, one night, Charlie Miller come running after me there, and I think I had the... I think I was helping the hospital that night. That was it, yeah. And he said, I want you to go on. He said, you got plenty of lunch. And I said, yeah. He said, I want you to go out on the Buckley Turn. And the Buckley Turn out of here, yeah, I don't know how they do it now, but in those days, it was usually track 23 or 24, chuck right full, you know, to the caboose would be down by the west lead, and just room for the engine, they'd be. Oh, maybe 75 or 80 gondolas and hoppers and one thing or another in there, just room for the engine, you know. I didn't know Glenn Portwood at all, you know, and I'd seen his name on the board. And by golly, they called me for that, and I wanted to go, but I didn't know if I could cut it, and I hadn't discovered the 1274 much about it either, you know. And so I got there. The one thing about him, he's a last-minute Willie. You know, he never got there till just ready to shove off, right there. And I had this thing, she wasn't a very good steamer to start with, and we got the thing going. He finally come, he always wore boots. I remember he always had those high boots on. And he looked at me, he didn't know me, I didn't know him. He said, are you ready? And I said, yeah, he put his overalls on his boots. And I said, okay, I guess. And he whistled off across D Street there, and we went up in the same, but I was shivering in my boots, and I had trouble with that right-hand door, because, you know, the quadrant that your Johnson bar turns on is right there so close to the chain from this door on the right-hand side. It was a round door. It wasn't elliptical like most of them.
Yeah.
But he was pretty good about that. He showed me, he said, you're working too hard. Putting too much coal before we got to Puyallup. And of course, we had to stop outside of Puyallup because, you know, you get on that A track that goes parallel right to Meeker on that, and then that takes you right into the Buckley line. And while we were stopped there, well, he showed me, and he shook her down a little and showed me what I was doing wrong. And we got up there, and I did pretty good. We never got back till noon the next day.
Yeah, long hard trip.
And I got along fine with him, and I kind of got onto the darn thing there. That right-hand door was that I had made about, you know, I wasn't used to it.
I never ever saw it.
You hit the scoop on that framework. But I went out with him the next night, and I got along fine that time. You know. Didn't have any trouble.
His compound engine that he's speaking of, it was compound engines were brought about in an effort to get more work out of the steam of a locomotive, so that when the steam was used in the high-pressure cylinder, instead of exhausting out the stack like it would normally do, it went into a low-pressure cylinder, was used a second time, and then exhausted out the stack. And this Johnson bar that he mentioned is the reverse mechanism for a locomotive. When it's in forward position, the locomotive goes ahead, straight up is neutral and back is for backup. And it was, in those days, a great huge lever that was maybe 5 feet above the deck. And it was quite an operation to get a hold of the thing and throw it over, because it resisted your movements a lot of times.
Yeah.
Sometimes the fireman would help the engineer throw it over.
Rafters sometimes too, when they're just out of the shop there.
Yeah, they'd be doing tight. Boy. Just wouldn't move very easily.
In more recent times, it was an error, as we see. You would simply shove it ahead, and then a corresponding business in the air cylinder would move your actual links.
You had a kind of a power assist
on
the actual movement up, so it could be done with one hand, and it was just a.
And then on the Q5s and Q6s, it was a wheel, see? A gearing wheel that would spin around.
When you were saying Q5 and Q6, was that a switcher engine? Or?
No.
Those were passenger engines. All engines were classified. Each railroad had their own system. On Northern Pacific, they went by letters with variations in that letter classification designated by a number starting with 1 and 2 and so forth. So that the first of the Q engines, all the Qs were passenger engines. Pacific type, which was a 4-6-2, and a wheel arrangement. When they say 4-6-2, the first number refers to the small wheels in front, and the second number refers to the driving wheels, and then the third number refers to the trailing wheels. And the first Qs were
20-hundreds. Perfectly straight along the top.
Yeah, they didn't have a tapered
wagon
boiler. And then it went to, I don't know, I don't remember.
It had the Stevenson gear.
They had Q4s.
Yeah. It had the Stevenson gear on there too, those Qs did.
Yeah.
Perfectly straight, and the old Stevenson gear on the slanted cylinders.
Different locomotives use different valve gears. That operates the valves, which allows the steam into the pistons. And by varying the position of the Johnson bar, it varies the movement of those valves so that the locomotive, as it gets going, can run at higher speeds. It's called hooking it up, and you would bring the Johnson bar or reverse lever up closer to being on center, and it would generate less power but more speed. So the locomotive got going down the track where you'd want.
You're using the expansive power of steam. See, as he hooks it up. You see, when you put it down in the corner, then she gets steam the full stroke of that. She gets the steam all the way. Well, as you get up your momentum, then you hook it up a little, then she gets steam this far, and the rest of it is expansive. See, that saves your water, saves your steam.
It's kind of like shifting gears on an automobile, just the way it.
But you're playing on the expansive powers of the steam.
When a steam engine was running good, that was always a kind of a thrill. Even when you'd worked on them a long time, to be on a steam engine when you could really run fast, like on a small passenger train or a big one too. And I can always remember we'd be running along going to Seattle and you'd run alongside a Boeing field and the a lot of the traffic runs right alongside of you there. And work with some engineers who could really get them hooked up just the right spot, get the throttle set in the right spot, and that passenger engine would just be moving down the track, you know, maybe 75 or 80 miles an hour.
And very little noise, too.
And, yeah, they wouldn't make much noise or vibration. Everything would be working just right. And
you're saving
just
your water.
By those people, and they look so surprised when they look up to you and go past them.
That heavy
and riding a steam locomotive at 75 miles an hour seemed twice as fast as riding a diesel at 75. A diesel just is like driving in a car. You don't feel that speed. But a steam locomotive, when it would go 75, you knew you were going 75.
I'll tell you,
everything was working in really experience.
I still remember out on the 2609 coming down Napa Vine Hill. Ross Bodoran was sick and in the caboose.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I'd ever fired one of those. And coming down the hill, the fireman, Jokum. I put a speedometer on there, and I wasn't used to the speedometer. And I knew where he was going. I looked up there, and it said 71 on this. That was down Napa Vine Hill, you know. And I thought, boy, oh boy, that's quite a thrill for me to ride that fast on a, it was a 680, you know. And boy,
yeah, that's pretty fast for a freight train.
Yeah, he was kind of a fast boy, that guy. He liked to go fast.
Yeah, he was a fast runner.
But I wasn't used to the speedometer, of course. That was about the
only engine. Well, that was the only
engine
we had. We had speedometers, really, Class A engines.
71 miles an hour, going downhill with about 65 or 70 cars back of you.